It's time for Northwestern Outdoors Radio, the show focusing on fishing, hunting, outdoor recreation, destinations, and conservation in the region where you live and play. Northwestern Outdoors is brought to you by Max Lure Company, Sportsman's Warehouse, and Wallowa County. And now, let's see what's going on in the field and on the water with your host, John Cruz.
We're starting off the show today with some good news out of Wallowa County in Northeast Oregon. There's a small river flowing out of the Wallowa Mountains there. It's called the Lostine River, and for the first time in nearly 50 years, coho salmon are expected to return there to spawn. We're not talking about just a couple either. Nope. Some 5,000 salmon from this Lostine River run have passed over Bonneville Dam on the Columbia River, and even after traveling up the Columbia and the Snake and the Grand Ronde Rivers, several thousand of these fish are expected to return to this little mountain stream. It's all a result of a 2017 reintroduction of these fish by the Umatilla and Nez Perce tribes in partnership with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And in a day and age filled with bad news about salmon numbers, this appears to be a real success story. This week on Northwestern Outdoors Radio, we'll be taking you to the remote reaches of Southeast Oregon when we talk to Rob Lyon. He's got an article in this month's edition of Northwest Sportsman Magazine about a cast and blast trip for chukar and smallmouth bass he enjoyed in the Owyhee Canyon lands. And if you're looking for a real adventure with social distancing as far as the eye can see, this trip may be for you. But be forewarned, you'll want to be prepared if you go, because help will be a long, long ways away should you need it. Bob Loomis has been fishing at Banks Lake in eastern Washington for a walleye this month, and we'll let you know how that trip went during an extended max minute. And then we'll stay in the Evergreen State for a bit to chat with Anna Roth. She's the hiking content manager for the Washington Trails Association, and she's got some great ideas about trails you can hike on in the lowlands of the state where you can enjoy some nice walks in nature this fall and winter, and you won't need to strap on snowshoes when you do. Want more? Okay. Troy Rodakowski, one of my favorite guests, is back for a check-in. Troy is an outdoors writer out of Oregon, and he'll be filling you in about his latest articles, how his fall hunting season is going, and when we can expect to enjoy his Facebook live streams from the blind again, the Duck Blind Chronicles. On top of this, we've got some important information for those of you who like to hunt deer in Idaho as non-residents. And as always, we've got your Sportsman's Warehouse Trivia Question of the Week coming your way, where you get the chance to win a $25 gift card from America's Premier Outfitter. So, let's get this show on the road, as they say, and we'll do it the way we do every week with David Sparks and another edition of Sportsman Spotlight, brought to you by the Ag Information Network of the West.
Two unrelated sounds, related. David Sparks, Sportsman Spotlight. Hey, sportsman, what does this sound? And this sound have in common? I'll let Editor-in-Chief of Field and Stream, Colin Kearns, explain.
T. Edward Nickens lives in North Carolina, and the swamps in North Carolina are pretty famous for having some of the biggest black bears in the country. And years ago, Dolly Parton's cousin went down there for a hunt and shot the world record black bear. And so Eddie decided that he wanted to see what these woods and swamps were all about. He'd never been on a bear hunt, and it's a pretty thrilling hunt. They've got dogs that are tracking the bears, and it's really thick country to try and get through, and it's just a rush of adrenaline.
The animal weighed 880 pounds. That's pretty big.
Yeah, pretty big.
Just to expand a little bit on Colin's story, it was November 1998 when Coy Parton trucked his bear dogs from the East Tennessee Mountains to North Carolina's coastal plain. They cold trailed a massive set of tracks for nearly 2 miles, then jumped the bear in a thicket of canebrake and pine timber. As Colin just said, it still stands as the heaviest black bear ever taken in North America. Sure hope you outdoorsmen have enjoyed this episode of Sportsman Spotlight. I'm David Sparks. See you next time.
We've been telling you about Sportsman's Cove Lodge in Southeast Alaska for a while now, and there's a reason. They are the only Alaska lodge we talk about in this show. It's because they're truly Alaska's best lodge. The adventure starts with a float plane ride from Ketchikan, after which you'll get the chance to experience some of the best hospitality, food, and wonderful people you'll ever meet. Wildlife is abundant, from bears and deer to eagles and whales, and let's not forget the reason you're here, the fishing. Halibut, salmon, lingcod, rockfish, true cod, and more. It's all waiting for you in abundance at Sportsman's Cove Lodge. Book your trip today at alaskasbestlodge.com. That's alaskasbestlodge.com for Sportsman's Cove Lodge.
This is Bob. I can show you how to make $1,000 a day.
This is an alert. In 2018, 48 billion robocalls were placed to cell phones, and nearly 50% of those were scam-related. Scammers want money, personal information, and sensitive identity information. They use insurance and free vacation gimmicks as tools to get your cash and identities. Farmers, you have even more to lose when it comes to scams. Identity theft can really damage the day-to-day operations of the farm when your personal information is tied to farm accounts. If you're buying or selling items online, such as farm equipment, expect and know how to spot a potential scam. Watch for area codes that aren't local and make no sense. Another tip, scammers don't know farm lingo, so feel them out. Since robocalls are the number one complaint to the Federal Communications Commission, the U.S. Senate is now discussing a bill to make robocalls a criminal action, which would stop the calls. We urge you to call your senator today. Robocalls are robber calls.
You're back in with Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. We've got Rob Lyon on the line. He just wrote an article that you'll find in the current edition of Northwest Sportsman Magazine about hunting and fishing a remote area of the greater Northwest. It's the Owyhee Canyonlands. It's located in Southeast Oregon, and this looks like an incredible destination. Rob, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be here.
Let's start off with exactly where the Owyhee Canyonlands are and a little bit about this place, which I understand there's talk about making this a federally designated wilderness area.
That is correct, and Andy Walgamott, the editor at Northwest Sportsman, knows a lot more about the political conservative aspects of that than I, so I won't speak to that. But yeah, and it's a good thing, too, because to my understanding, it's the least populated country in the contiguous lower 48 states. And when you get out there, you certainly get that feeling. It's like the old West. You know, there's just space everywhere, and it's such a refreshing experience for the soul to be in an environment like that.
Well, you went there to do some chukar hunting, some smallmouth bass fishing. I know this is beautiful country, but like you said, it's very remote, and you need to be prepared if you go. So there's no cell service, I understand that. But beyond that, there's like no help if you get in trouble. There's not even any roads in some places, is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, there's grades, you know, scratched across the tablelands and the plateaus, and then if you go into the canyon, yeah, they don't qualify as roads, that's for sure. It's tough getting into the canyon in most places over there. Very tough. It's, you know, it's very rig specific in terms of your vehicle. I think most hunters probably park on the rim. You can get away with that, probably with most vehicles. But then you're up on the rim. You know, you're not down by the water, and the birds are all between the rim and the water. But it certainly prevents any major accidents getting stuck over there, or worse. On our last trip, we found a decent, it was like a year 2000 truck just abandoned down on the grade because the people couldn't get it out. But that
wow.
Kind of speaks to the challenge of getting in and out of the Owyhee River Canyon.
Now, you came up with a novel idea of traveling through this area using e-bikes. Tell our listeners more about this.
Well, it was an idea. We were working with Rad Power. They sent out a couple of bikes, and we wanted to press them into service doing what we do. And so we've tried this. We've tried this in the mountains, and we've tried it in the desert. And the principal idea is to increase your strike radius. So if you have a camp, you have a bike, e-bike or regular mountain bike, you can access more hunting habitat. So that's the idea. We've used that before, chasing steel steelhead on the Deschutes River, bringing a bike on the raft, and then being able to just cover a lot more ground. There are some caveats with bikes, be it e-bike or regular over there. The roads are really tough, they're really steep, and there is a plant. I haven't identified it yet, but it's got burrs that can cause some serious problems. Like, we woke up one morning to find both our bikes on their side. They crashed in the middle of the night. We thought it was animals, and we got up to find out it was only the bikes. But there was like probably 100 burrs in four tires, and all four tires were flat.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's good to know. So bring the goo sealant if you're going to go travel in this country. But great idea to get around and of course, to get down to where the river is and where some of these birds are as well. Let's talk about the hunting. Let's talk about the fishing. First off, the chukar hunting. I mean, I've done some chukar hunting in some places in eastern Washington, eastern Oregon, and most days you're lucky if you scare up, you know, two or three coveys. It sounds like you found a whole lot more chukar than that.
Yeah, we certainly did. I think the birds are pretty happy with where they are over there. You know, I mean, first of all, it's great habitat. Second of all, there's nobody there chasing them around, so
right.
Hard to beat that.
And what's the limit in Oregon for chukar? Is it 10?
No, I think it's 6, as I recall, last time I looked.
Okay. I'll be honest, never even came close to a limit in any state I've hunted. That's how hard they are to hunt. So
yeah, I think quail is probably 10.
All right. So any rate, so the chukar hunting was very good. And I presume they did the classic, let's run up the ridge to the top, and then we'll fly down, you have to chase us, and you just kind of do this, you know, Greek mythical push the rock up the hill, except in this case it's push the chukar up the hill.
Absolutely. But I think what is, I'm not going to say unique, but what really shines about the country over there is a considerable amount of hunting habitat in the canyon, such that it isn't 45 degrees vertical. There aren't scree slopes everywhere. It's actually very pleasant, very easy to get around in. And, you know, doing that between the upper Palisade, the rim, and the canyon bottom, you know, it's pretty easy to bump into birds.
I like that. I like that a lot. Chukar hunting without killing yourself.
Folks,
exactly. You're listening to Northwestern Outdoors Radio. We're talking to Rob Lyon about a recent cast and blast trip he took to the Owyhee Canyonlands of southeast Oregon, a very remote area. Let's talk about the fishing. I have fished the Owyhee below the reservoir, below the dam, and it's a fantastic trout fishery for brown trout and for rainbows too, but on the other side, it's all smallmouth bass. Tell me about the fishery for smallmouth bass and how the fishing was.
Well, it's a prolific fishery there. They certainly put the small in the smallie, though.
I understand.
Yeah. The fish look great, frisky, healthy. We had a dinner of pan-fried smallies, and it was delicious. We predominantly fly fish. That's kind of our roots, our background. And we got fish quite readily on the surface, nymphs, woolly buggers. Not a real difficult fish to catch. One interesting thing, on the upper river, there's less fish. There are some red band trout up there, too. We didn't see any. But the fish, the smallmouth, we found there's a lot of hot springs, first of all, on the river. And we found concentrations of bass right off the mouth of where the hot spring debouches into the river. And so that was a real key. You could see the steam as you moved along, and then you head for that. And there was good-sized fish as well. I was quite impressed with that.
Very interesting. So in terms of the size of these bass, even when you first started describing these, I was immediately thinking of the John Day River, where you'll catch 100 bass a day, but 95 of them are less than 8 inches long. Is it kind of like that, or is it a little bit better?
No, it's very much like that.
All right. So lots of small fish, lots of fish that are easy to catch, but now and again you get a diamond in the rough that's got some size. What was the biggest one you caught during your trip?
Oh, gee whiz, you know, in absolute terms, it doesn't impress anyone, but I'd say we might have gotten a 10-incher over there. But, you know, I'll also say this, one of my favorite panfish is the crappie.
Yes.
And we actually got crappie over there. Our understanding, our best guess is that they came up from the reservoir. They might have been stocked in the reservoir, but they came up, you know, 30, 40 miles upriver. That was a real treat to hook into.
That is absolutely flabbergasting to me. I mean, I'm used to finding crappie. Compton-Wapping reservoirs. I've just never heard of them in a river. This river, as a smaller stream that has a good flow for smallmouth, the occasional trout. Never would have imagined you'd be catching crappie there.
Yeah, it was a real surprise for us. We typically float the river. We float it in the fall when there's no water in the river. That's why there's nobody in the canyon.
Sure.
But the beauty of that, if you can get through, you know, a bit of a bump and grind, is you have the canyon to yourself. We didn't do that this time, obviously, with the e-bikes, but just wanted to say.
Oh, wow. Well, I'll tell you what. Sounds like an incredible trip, folks. You'll definitely want to do some pre-planning. And the place to start would probably be Rob Lyon's article in Northwest Sportsman Magazine. It's in this month's edition, A Tale of Two Canyons. It's all about his trip to the Owyhee Canyonlands. Sounds like a fantastic expedition, and I want to thank you for sharing it with our listeners today on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Well, thank you, John. It's enjoyable to talk with you.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is the voice for your public lands, waters, and wildlife. From the Canadian Yukon to the Florida Everglades, we're stepping up to conserve North America's public lands, defend our hunting and fishing traditions, and expand access to the outdoors. Find out how you can get involved at backcountryhunters.org.
Are you ready for some real adventure? Then wake up to winter in Wallowa County. Grab your camera, put on your snowshoes, and take a professionally guided hike into the quiet solitude and breathtakingly rugged beauty of the Eagle Cap Wilderness. Or sleep under the stars and test your mettle with some winter camping and ice fishing for kokanee and trout at Wallowa Lake. Or bring your snowmobile to Salt Creek Summit and explore Wallowa County on 150 miles of Northeast Oregon's best trails. Your outdoor winter adventure begins at www.wallowacountychambers.com.
With more of the great outdoors on Northwestern Outdoors Radio with John Cruz.
It's time for another Max Minute, brought to you every week by Max Lure. We've got a special fishing report edition for you with Bob Loomis. Bob, welcome back.
Thank you, John.
So, Bob, you and Richie Herod, the host of the Northwest Outdoorsman, you went fishing out at Banks Lake in eastern Washington on a November day, and you had quite a day. Tell our listeners about it.
Yeah, it was fantastic, John. You know, this time of the year, these fish go on the feed bag, and we just happened to hit it on a day that, you know, colder weather snapped a couple days prior. The water temperatures really start plummeting, and all of a sudden, these fish will just start feeding. And when you get large batches of bait fish, of course, you know, it's like the Thanksgiving dinner table. They're all going to show up.
So what were you using? How many walleye did you catch?
We were actually using the Sonic bait fish, and we were fishing it off of the back pull point. So it was basically fishing like a blade bait. And, you know, it was phenomenal. We probably caught between Eric Broughton, one of our pro staffers up there, and Britton, and Richie and I think we landed over 35 fish in a couple hours. And, you know, they were all really nice, solid. They probably averaged 20 inches. So they were nice fish.
Oh, my gosh. All right. What size of Sonic bait fish and how deep were you fishing?
We were fishing 35 to 52 feet, and we were using the Glow White, which kind of emulates the small perch that they were feeding on, and we used the quarter ouncer. All the colors worked, but that quarter ouncer was much closer to the size of the bait that we were using and worked extremely well.
Well, there you go. A fishing report from Banks Lake in eastern Washington. The walleye are definitely on the bite, and now you know exactly what to use to get at them. The Sonic bait fish from Max Lure. Look for it at sporting goods stores near you or online anytime at maxlure.com.
That's the sound you hear when a fish hits the new Sonic baitfish from Max Lure Company. This metal lure can be cast, trolled, or jigged, and will catch just about anything that swims in the sea, the river, or the lake. The Sonic baitfish has a unique vibration and flutter that can be rigged in 7 different ways. With all sorts of eye-catching colors and weights available, you'll be rigging for the Sonic baitfish as your go-to lure. It's the Sonic baitfish. Only from Max Lure Company.
If your favorite season is deer, if your favorite salad is meat salad, if your favorite gifts come wrapped in fur or scales, if you're dreaming of a white and camo Christmas, then you'd fit right in at Sportsman's Warehouse. And lucky for you, Sportsman's is offering amazing deals all season long. So visit your local store or go online to sportsmans.com and gear up for an unforgettable holiday.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is the voice for your public lands, waters, and wildlife. From the Canadian Yukon to the Florida Everglades, we're stepping up to conserve North America's public lands, defend our hunting and fishing traditions, and expand access to the outdoors. Find out how you can get involved at backcountryhunters.org.
Welcome back to Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. It might be late fall. We might be heading into winter, but that doesn't mean you have to stop hiking. There's still hikes you can enjoy here in the Northwest, particularly in Washington State, and they don't require snowshoes either. Now, we've got somebody very special on the line to give you some suggestions about this. It's Anna Roth. She's with the Washington Trails Association, and she knows all about hiking trails in the Evergreen State. Anna, great to have you back on the show.
Hey, John. Good to be back.
So let's talk about some trails that you in particular enjoy. And we'll work our way from the North Sound down towards Vancouver, then head across the mountains to eastern Washington. When it comes to North Sound, Bellingham, Everett area, what's a trail or two you would suggest people enjoy during this time of year?
Well, first, I do want to say if some of these locations that I mentioned don't quite fall within your driving range, I highly recommend people use the HikeFinder map at WTA.org. It is one of the best ways to see visually what is near to your house and what sort of hikes you can go do. It also lets you pretty quickly scan the details of a hike so you can decide whether or not it's right for you. But I can happily give some suggestions. I love telling folks good new places to discover. So the first spot that I was thinking about for Bellingham, especially, but also Everett, it's not too far away, is the Skagit Wildlife Area.
Yes.
This is a really good one if you are a wildlife viewing fan, really good for photography, especially in the winter, you're going to start to get the snow geese. And also really nice if you, don't necessarily want too much exertion. It's pretty flat, so you're going to get a ton of beautiful scenery and a lot of wildlife without too much physical effort, which is great, especially if you're recovering from COVID. I know that a lot of folks are being encouraged as you're getting back into exercising to take it real slow. This is a nice one to try that with.
I agree with that one. Another one I like, which is kind of in the same general area, just outside of Anacortes, is that Padilla Bay Shore Trail. It's about 2.2 miles, follows a dike, absolutely flat. But I don't know about you, but I really enjoy, those tidal flats and especially all the bird life you see out there.
I totally agree, John. I actually prefer the shore and the beach in the winter. It's my preferred time to visit. So, yes, you are spot on as far as I'm concerned with Padilla Bay.
All right. So we are in agreement on this. Let's head south towards Olympia. We've got a lot of listeners who tune in every week on KMAS. Also the Tacoma area. And in Tacoma, you've got a really big urban park there that actually offers quite a bit of shoreline to explore, don't you?
Yeah, one of my recommendations was going to be Point Defiance. I think Point Defiance is really remarkable. It's got beautiful forested trails. It's also got really lovely striking views of the Sound and the Tacoma Narrows Bridge. You can get a pretty good workout because you can string together miles and miles of hiking in there. And when it's open, the Point Defiance Zoom Aquarium is amazing. Unfortunately, I think they're closed currently, but definitely something to put a pin in and go visit whenever you can.
What about Olympia proper? If you have maybe government business down there, or just find yourself with a couple of hours to spare.
Yeah, Olympia is one of the most remarkable cities, as far as I'm concerned, in Washington, as far as small parks go. I feel like every time I go to Olympia, I find a new park to go visit. One of my most favorite is Watershed Park. It's real small, real short, but it's just a great little shot of nature. There's also a really lovely walk you can do right on the Capitol campus, just around the lake and on the perimeter of the campus itself, which is, again, it's beautiful. The construction of the Capitol building is really beautiful, and I've seen a lot of wildlife in that lake. I think people ask me what's on there. I saw an otter, actually, which is pretty neat. Yeah.
Otters are one of my favorite animals. They are just really fun to watch. All right. Again, folks, we are talking to Anna Roth with the Washington Trails Association about some wintertime hikes you can enjoy in the lowlands where you don't have to worry about snow most of the time. Let's head further south to Vancouver. Now, Vancouver gets short shrift because everyone thinks about Portland, but Vancouver's got some really good hiking trails in the area, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I am super excited to talk to you about this one because WTA just helped finish up some expansion at the Ridgefield National Wildlife Refuge, which is right outside of Vancouver. Originally, this had about 2 miles of trails, and now, thanks to the planning and the construction that WTA contributed to, so we actually helped plan this trail route as well as build it. We were working with WDFW with that. You can do a 5 mile loop here now. And I mean, when I say it opened, it opened really recently. So if you get down there, you'll be probably one of the first ones to go visit.
And one thing we should mention, folks, both the Ridgefield National Wildlife Refuge and also the Skagit Flats Wildlife Area, these are both used by waterfowl hunters as well. So if you see people out there with shotguns, that's why they're there. It is duck and goose hunting season. Don't be afraid and just enjoy your time together, so to speak. What else in Vancouver would you recommend?
Yeah, and John, that's a great note, definitely. I would also say if you go to photograph wildlife, WTA has lots of tips on how to do so responsibly at WTA.org, because obviously you want to be sure to give the animals the space that they need to live their lives.
Right.
The one other location that I really like down in that area is the Silver Shadow Loop, and that's a little bit outside of town. It's up in the Yakult State Forest. I will say that this one might have a little bit of snow, but having grown up in Southwest Washington, I didn't experience a ton of snow in the winter, and so my bet is that this area over the course of the winter will probably be dry. It's just a little bit higher up in the mountains, but again, I didn't grow up with a ton of snow even up in the mountains when I was down there, and so I thought that'd probably be a good one. The Silver Shadow Loop is super nice. You get great views out of the Yakult State Forest, and it's 5 miles, so it's a really great little half-day jaunt. You just need a shot of nature, but you want to get further out than a local park.
Gotcha. Let's head east of the Cascades. Let's head to the biggest city east of the Cascades. That would be Spokane. There's a couple of really great options when it comes to day hiking out there, isn't there?
There's so much in Spokane. I think a lot of people who live on the west side don't realize how much hiking and recreation there is out in Spokane. It was hard for me to pick anything specific because I was like, go here. But what I'll start with is it's called the Knothead Loop, and it's actually just outside of Spokane in the Little Spokane Natural Area. So that's going to be 7 mile loop right off of the Little Spokane River. It's kind of close to Riverside State Park, if that helps people kind of
Yes. Place
themselves. And that area too, the Knothead Loop is something that WTA volunteers helped build. I went last November, I believe, and it was a total joy. It was a beautiful, crisp fall, sunny day, and got a great little workout. A little bit of elevation gain, but not too much. Had gorgeous views of the river, and again, a nice little half day.
You know, one place that people in Spokane seem to especially love, Dishman Hills. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about that destination?
Yeah. Oh, Dishman Hills is beautiful. There's a short little hike you can do up to the Rocks of Sharon. Again, you get a great overlook of the area. On the other side, I guess I'm talking about, there's a northern trailhead, and then on the other side of the property, there's more of a southeast trailhead. And that one is going to be accessed through the Eiler Creek Conservation Area, and that's another one that I've done relatively recently, and I did really enjoy that. Hikes are a little bit shorter. They're going to be, I think, between 3 and 5 miles, but you can, again, string together loops, or you can make it longer if you want to.
All right. Well, as you can hear, folks, there's lots of hiking to be done this fall, this winter, in Washington State. And if you want to find out more information, you really should go to WTA.org. Just go to the hike finder map, like Anna suggested, and you're going to find all sorts of hikes near you. We're just scratching the surface, as you know, but we have to, unfortunately, in the interest of time. So again, WTA.org, that's a website to go to. I would also suggest that you consider joining the Washington Trails Association. Doesn't cost much to do so. And this organization, this nonprofit, does a lot of heavy lifting in terms of maintaining our trails and opening up more trails, as you just heard. As a matter of fact, Tuesday, December 1st is Giving Day. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit more about this opportunity to help out your organization?
Yeah, Giving Tuesday happens every year. And thank you, John. That was really, really lovely to hear. We appreciate everybody who makes our work possible, and that really is our members. Giving Tuesday is an opportunity to give, to join WTA. As a member of WTA, you'll receive our quarterly magazine, which includes lots of news. Like we have a nice article in there about that Ridgefield Trail that I mentioned earlier. You'll also get hiking suggestions every quarter, so you'll get spring, summer, fall, winter hiking suggestions. And you'll be powering the work that we're doing, which, as you heard during my hike descriptions, we're building trails, we're advocating for new trails. The folks that work with land managers actually have a say in how the trail needs to be scoped and built. And you'll be powering our campaigns that are working to make trails for everyone forever a reality. We really want anybody who wants to get out on trail to be able to do so, and that is only going to be possible if we have our member support.
The website again, WTA.org. You don't have to wait till Tuesday, December 1st to join either. You can join at any time, and you are welcome to do so. Anna, thanks so much for sharing these great hiking suggestions with us today on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Of course, John. Thank you so much.
Back in with Northwestern Outdoors Radio, and I'm glad you are because one of my favorite guests is on the line. It's that outdoors writer from Oregon, Troy Rodakowski. Troy, great to have you back on the air.
Man, I love visiting with you, John, anytime.
Well, I had to get a hold of you today because I know you went out on a muzzleloader hunt in Western Oregon. You were looking for black-tailed deer. How did it go?
You know, the bucks have been rutting pretty good over here right now. I mean, between now and the end of the month, a lot of the archery hunters are going to do pretty well. And, you know, we've got a muzzleloader tag left to fill. And this past week, they've actually been chasing the does pretty good and responding to calls. And it was a little slow this morning, you know. We're looking forward to maybe tomorrow getting back into them. You know, it's hit and miss with blacktail. You know, it can be feast or famine. So it just depends on what mood they're in, what the weather's doing, what the barometer's doing, what the moon's looking like. So you just got to keep an eye on that.
Bottom line is, you were on a blacktail diet today and you lost weight.
I did. I lost some weight today, you know, hiking around, didn't find a deer, but that's why they call it hunting and just love being out there. This is a great time of year to be in the woods no matter what you're doing.
Well, I was checking out the Troy Rodakowski Facebook page. I noticed that your dad did cash in on his muzzleloader hunt. Why don't you tell our listeners about that?
Yeah, he did. Actually, he was hunting the same area that I was this morning just a couple days ago, and he got up there, and he was, you know, doing some doe and estrus bleeding, a little bit of buck grunts. He did rattle a little bit. He saw three or four different bucks before he actually got a shot at the one that he ended up harvesting, and they were chasing does, and, you know, it was pretty good day, and like I told him after he harvested that buck, he goes, man, he says, I'm really glad to get it. I go, you should be, because it can be on or off, and we went up there today, same spot. And it was off. So it just depends on how things are going and the temperature of the deer. But, you know, we're supposed to have some cold days here and a little more rain coming in. So should be pretty good.
Now, I know when it comes to blacktail, the vegetation is pretty thick. So it's not necessarily a spot and stock show. Were you and your dad hunting from ground blinds? Were you hunting from tree stands? Exactly how were you going about this?
A lot of people use ground blinds and tree stands. We actually slow hunt and still hunt a little bit. We'll just, you know, we'll sit up against a tree, call a little bit. If we see one, we might try to close the gap. He happened to be calling the other day, saw a buck crossing a little opening and making his way across real slow, following a doe, and he kind of stalked in a little bit, you know, about 50 yards, got behind some blackberry bushes and some little saplings, and he was able to make about a 95-yard shot with his muzzleloader, and it all came together good.
Well, it was a dandy buck, that's for sure. Let's turn our attention to waterfowl hunting. I love the Duck Blind Chronicles, your Facebook live streamed episode that you broadcast from the Willamette Valley in Oregon over the last couple years, but I haven't seen any additions to the Duck Blind Chronicles yet this year. Don't tell me COVID's getting in the way. I definitely need my duck hunting fix from you, Troy.
Honestly, the only thing that's got in the way is elk hunting and deer hunting. And my buddy did go out last week and they had a great day. They shot a bunch of mallards. They got a banded mallard. They even shot a Eurasian widgeon drake. You know, most of those birds were actually local birds. The bird that they did shoot that had a band on it was actually from Fern Ridge, which is probably 15 to 20 miles west of where they were hunting. And we're looking forward to a good season this year, and we're hoping to get back on here live in about a week or two once the big game seasons are over and northern birds are in, and maybe do some good shows.
I look forward to it. Always do. All right, so your Duck Blind Chronicles, they're broadcast from private property. And of course, folks, if you can find somebody willing to lease you a flooded field, you're probably going to be in business this season or next season. Think ahead for next year. But a lot of folks are hunting public land. Now, when it comes to Oregon, there's four main waterfowling hunting areas I think people think about. Number one, Sauvie Island. northwest of Portland. There's the Klamath Marsh near Klamath Falls. There's the Summer Lake Wildlife Area in southeast Oregon and Ladd Marsh in northeast Oregon. They are crowded, but are these good bets for waterfowlers in the fall and winter?
I believe that you can find places out there in all those. You know, I've hunted all those over the years. And if you do your research and scout and check those places out, you'll find places to hunt there. I mean, they can be crowded. You also got to remember, even though waterfowling is not a fair weather game, most people don't want to sit out there in the rain and the snow and the cold weather. So if you find time to go out there when it is nasty and maybe the birds are flying, you're not going to run into as many people and you're going to find places to set up a blind or, you know, jump shoot or whatever you might want to do.
I'm guessing there's some other opportunities as well for hunters in Oregon and, for that matter, other states too throughout the Northwest. And everyone always thinks of the popular state wildlife areas, but there's a lot of national wildlife refuges that offer hunting. I know in Oregon, you're looking in that Pendleton-Hermiston area. You've got some opportunities up there. What are some other opportunities you'd recommend when it comes to public lands hunting or maybe easy to access private land hunting?
I think places down like near even the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge, you know, adjacent to that, I think down towards Klamath is really good. The whole Willamette River Greenway is excellent, especially if we get cold weather and all the stagnant waters are freezing and you have the river going. There are some great duck hunting opportunities on the backwater sloughs and off the Willamette and different river systems like the Sania, McKenzie, you know, the Umpqua, you know, and I think people, if they look towards those places, and also a lot of times people forget about the coast. I mean, right. You know, work the tides. You know, you get a big windy storm in here. I mean, all the places on the coast, a lot of the lakes and different things like that, great places for people to go.
That's some great advice. And speaking of great advice, I know you've got an article out right now in the Oregon Hunter Association magazine. Can you share one of the tips with us that you shared in your article there?
Absolutely. The article's called The Circle of Trust, and it's basically hunting late season waterfowl and trying to convince those birds to commit to a decoy spread or your setup or your blind. And what I can tell most waterfowl hunters is if you're going to hunt late season waterfowl, make sure that you've got the proper decoy setup, not too many decoys. Don't overdo it and don't overcall. I think these birds have heard just about everything, you know, on their trek south. You know, everything sounds ugly to them at this point. You know, being simple is the best thing to do as far as calling and convincing birds to come into your setup.
All right. We have got to go, but you're almost done with deer and elk hunting. So when can folks expect to maybe hear a few editions of the Duck Blind Chronicles, the live stream hunts you broadcast on your Facebook page at Troy Rodakowski?
We're probably looking at about Thanksgiving weekend. We will be probably going live that Saturday following Thanksgiving, and that'll be our first one, and it should be really great. We should have some northern birds in by then, and it'll be a great time. So if you can tune into the Duck Blind Chronicles, look them up on Facebook, follow us. It would be awesome.
And those are generally Saturday mornings from shooting time and until a couple hours after, right?
Yeah, we usually we'll go live from shooting time until sometimes noon or one at the latest. But yeah, we'll run 2 or 3 hours at a time, take a break, and we'll go again. So just make sure to check the live feed, and if we're live, please tune in.
It's the Duck Blind Chronicles. If you can't be hunting yourself, it's the next best thing. Check it out at Troy Rodakowski's Facebook page and make some time on Saturday mornings between Thanksgiving and the end of the season. Troy, always a pleasure to talk to you. Happy holidays to you, my friend.
Happy holidays to you, man. Thanks for having me, John. I appreciate it.
If your favorite season is deer, if your favorite salad is meat salad, if your favorite gifts come wrapped in fur or scales, if you're dreaming of a white and camo Christmas, then you'd fit right in at Sportsman's Warehouse. And lucky for you, Sportsman's is offering amazing deals all season long. So visit your local store or go online to sportsmans.com and gear up for an unforgettable holiday.
Are you looking to reel in the marketing opportunity of a lifetime? Then set the hook, because we've got it right here for you. America Outdoors Radio has sponsorships available, and we offer affordable platforms to reach thousands of listeners interested in fishing, hunting, and the outdoors. Find out more by contacting John Cruz through his website at AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com.
Wake up to winter in Wallowa County. Grab your camera and don your skis for some Nordic skiing adventure at Salt Creek Summit or Wallowa Lake. Or spend the day on the family-friendly slopes of Fergie Ridge. Or slip into a set of skates and enjoy some time on the ice at our outdoor ice rink. Need to warm up? Then grab a cup of coffee or hot chocolate at one of our fine coffee and confectionery shops. And when evening comes, enjoy some of Wallowa County's fine dining and gaze at the stars before you dream of tomorrow's adventures. Your winter adventure begins at www.wallowacountychamber.com.
We've got time for one more shot of Northwestern Outdoors Radio with John Cruz.
I'm glad you're back. We've got big news out of Idaho for big game hunters. As you probably know, deer and elk hunting in Idaho has gained in popularity in recent years, with residents not only in the state but throughout the United States because of the robust populations of both deer and elk in the Gem State and the wonderful wilderness settings you can hunt these animals in. Unfortunately, Idaho has become a victim of its own success, and hunter congestion is becoming a real issue in the forests of Idaho during their big game hunting seasons. That's why state fish and game commissioners have decided to limit non-resident deer and elk hunting in Idaho starting next year. In past years, up to 28,300 non-residents have been able to draw deer and elk tags, but now hunters in most general season elk and deer hunts will be limited to 10 or 15% of the total hunters in each elk zone or deer unit based on hunter participated estimates averaged over the last 5 years. What does this mean? First off, those forests will be less crowded and resident hunters in Idaho will be able to enjoy a more quality experience. As for non-residents, there is definitely going to be significantly less opportunity, so you'll want to get your tag as early as possible, and they go on sale on December 1st, so you'll want to act fast. Oh, and one more piece of not-so-good news for you out-of-state hunters. To offset the hit to Idaho Fish and Game coffers because of reduced license revenues, if you're a non-resident hunter, it's going to cost you more next year to hunt in the Gem State. So, if you're a hunter who lives in Idaho, you're probably saying hallelujah about all of this. If you live out of state and want to go after deer or elk there, you would be forgiven if you're saying bah humbug. And with that, it's time for your Sportsman's Warehouse trivia question of the week, and it's about that movie that bah humbug phrase came from, A Christmas Carol, that wonderful story Charles Dickens wrote in 1843, which later became a movie and has been produced in newer variations many times over. As most of you know, Ebenezer Scrooge finally came around at the end and bought a marvelous Christmas dinner for his long-suffering employee Bob Cratchit and his entire family, to include Bob's sixth son, Tiny Tim. Here's your question. What was the main course of that Christmas meal the Cratchits enjoyed? Was it a Christmas goose, a Christmas turkey, or a Christmas pheasant? You can give us your answer on our Facebook page at Northwestern Outdoors Radio, or if you prefer, just go to our website at northwesternoutdoors.com, go to the Contact Us page, and let us know. One lucky person who guesses right wins that $25 gift card we give away every week from Sportsman's Warehouse, where Black Friday weekend sales are going on right now. And if you are looking for a gift for the outdoorsman or outdoorswoman in your life, you really need to get down to your local Sportsman's Warehouse store. Check out the fantastic deals they have, and you'll want to take advantage of them for Christmas, but you've got to do so this weekend. Speaking of Christmas, you'll want to tune in next weekend to not only this show, but also our sister show at America Outdoors Radio, because we will be doing our ever-popular Christmas gift giveaway program, and we'll have over $1,000 worth of gifts to give away, to include a $440 pellet grill from Camp Chef and products from WorkSharp, Max Lure, and more. The first step to participate is to like and follow both of our Facebook pages at Northwestern Outdoors Radio Radio and America Outdoors Radio. Then, just tune in to both shows next weekend. You can find stations and airtimes through our websites. And if you don't do Facebook, you can enter and ask for one gift for Christmas by emailing us through our websites at northwesternoutdoors.com or americaoutdoorsradio.com. With 12 gifts to give away over the course of two shows, you've got a decent shot at winning one of them. On that note, we've got to go. But until next time, do take care, God bless, stay healthy, and make it a point to spend some time outdoors.